this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Christian civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, this is the last time. This is the last time we'll be with you this year. When we return again on Tuesday evening, why, it will be a new year. We will be running a program on Monday evening, but it'll be a rerun. So if you want to listen, fine. I suspect a lot of you will be celebrating the new year, however. So I'm going to take the day off, and then we get back to our routine of 5 hours a day for another year. Well, I just want to mention that on the 15th of January, why we're going to be changing our shortwave frequencies. Our afternoon program, and that runs 3 to 5 Pacific and 6 to 8 on the East Coast, will change to 9.480 megahertz. 9.480 megahertz. This evening program that you're listening to now, which is 8 to 10 on the Pacific Coast and 11 to 1 on the East Coast, will shift to 5.755 megahertz. That's 5.755. So please make a notation so that you can continue picking us up if you're listening on shortwave. Of course, you can listen on the Internet 5 hours a day to Radio Liberty or AmericaNewsNet.com or GCNLive.com, and that's listed on our website. And then, of course, if you want to hear 9 hours a day, you can get that on Telstar 5, but you won't get much of anything accomplished. Anyway, the information is there. We want you to listen. We want you to tell others. Well, this evening, we're having with us Dr. Pat Halliday, and we're going to be talking about her ministry, which is really to people who have deep spiritual problems, who actually, in many instances, are demonically possessed. So, Dr. Halliday, thank you so much for being with us.
Dr. Stan, I've been a fan of yours for many, many years.
Well, I didn't know that. the time we really talked was just a few weeks ago.
Well, you know, I came out of politics back in the 70s, and I ran for the state legislature back then and lost by 150 votes as a conservative woman, and then got into the battle of the ERA and all that stuff. And so I ran around with Bill Schlafly and all of those kind of people back then.
Good.
And so, of course, we used to hear about you. I never met you.
Well, it's so good to have a chance to talk to you this evening and about your ministry, because certainly your focus of attention has changed a lot since those days, hasn't it?
Oh, yes.
Well, you know, the thing is, in those days, I used to think that a political solution was possible, and I still think we should be involved in the politics, but you come to realize that this is really a spiritual battle, and there really are spiritual forces that work in this battle, and unless we address those, we can't understand anything that's going on. Nothing makes sense. I mean, you look at things that are happening here in this country, what's happened with God and prayer and the Ten Commandments in our schools, and it really doesn't make sense unless there's another force at work. And you try to explain what's really going on over in Afghanistan and in Iraq, you couldn't possibly do such a bad job unintentionally. And why, you know, when we want to pull our troops out of Iraq, are they talking about increasing the number of troops there so we can pull our troops out? And of course, we know that they have no intention of pulling our troops out. That's all to make the people here in America feel better. But what's this really all about? Well, when we get back here with Dr. Halliday, well, I think you'll be fascinated, because she obviously has come face to face with the very forces that we're talking about. An awful lot of people write about them and talk about them, but very few people have had that personal encounter that she has. So hold on to your hats. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, why don't you give us the background of how you got into your current ministry?
Well, you know, Dr. Stan, I had a spiritual crisis to appear in my life because of dabbling in the occult. And, of course, those were back in the years when the occult in America was still hidden. And it was just beginning to surface in books and in the drugstores and the magazines and thing, talk shows, you know. But I discovered one night that the devil was real when he came into my home. And his intention was to possess me. And I was sort of a strong-willed type of a person. And I said, well, I don't want anything to possess me. I just really want to be me, you know. And but there was a fear that came over me, and I cried out to the unknown God, and God came into to my bedroom, and he supernaturally saved me. And then from that time on, it's been a trek. It's been a spiritual journey with the Lord. And I received salvation, and then a little bit later on, I received the baptism of the Holy Spirit, and then I went over to Israel, where the Lord called me into the ministry. I was at a Catherine Kuhlman meeting back in the 70s, and I felt the Lord come upon me in that meeting, and he anointed my eyes and healed my body, and he said, go do my work. And it felt like a bucket of oil had been poured on me. And right after that, about 25 Jewish men, he led them to the Lord at different places at different times with me speaking in their language. And when I came home...
Now, do you speak Hebrew?
I can't even hardly speak English.
All right.
But, you know, when I came home, miracles just started happening in my ministry. And it was probably about a year then he started bringing demon-possessed people to me. And, of course, in our country, you know, the church just does not believe in miracles hardly, and they sure don't believe that Christians can have devils or that devils are real.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment.
All right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Holliday was saying that that actually evening, when, of course, he was like most people, quite unaware of what's going on in the world, and this demonic spirit, or perhaps the devil, came into her home and really wanted to take possession of her, and she cried out to the unknown God, because at that time I don't think she really had a personal relationship with our Lord, and of course God removed this demonic influence from her life, and after that she really entered the ministry. And she talks about going to Israel and actually speaking in Hebrew, although she is not fluent in Hebrew, really didn't know the language, but the Spirit had come upon her. She was able to speak in Hebrew. That a number of men, Hebrew men had come to know the Lord because of her ministering, but she was talking in a language she didn't know. But such things really apparently do happen. I've certainly heard similar stories. So she returns to the United States, and then what happened?
Well, when I got back, of course, God trained me in the ministry, and many, many miracles happened, great miracles.
And you were just saying that a lot of demonically possessed people started coming to you, and of course the church doesn't really recognize this. A lot of ministers think this is rather foolish, this idea that the truly miraculous things could happen. So you pick up the story.
Well, you know, it's interesting because the Lord would lead people to my house 2, 3, 4 counties away from where I lived, and they would just knock on my door, and they would say, the Lord Jesus Christ sent me here for you to pray for me. Well, we lived in a very fine section called Ponte Vedra Beach at that time.
That was in Florida?
Yes, just outside of Jacksonville. And some of those people that he would lead to my door were very poor people, common people, but I would let them in, and then they would just start talking to me, and I'd ask the Lord what he'd want me to do, and he led me into many, many deliverances and taught me how to cast out devils.
And of course, that is not widely accepted within the church today. That's something that comes from relics of the past. There are just very, very few people, certainly there are few people in the Catholic Church. They're professional exorcists. But within the Protestant Church, there are not very many people who are actually involved in this, frankly, casting out demonic spirits. And yet, I have no question in my mind that there really are demonic spirits, and I'm sure you must have been in some rather frightening encounters with those spirits, because sometimes they really are rather violent, aren't they?
Well, they are, but it's very interesting. I've never, when he was training me, I never had men around me to help with the ministry, and I just had to depend on the power of God.
Well, that's all you can depend on anyway, because there's nothing you can do. When you're faced with the reality of evil in this world, the only thing any of us can do is to depend
on
the Lord.
Well, the interesting thing about it, the homosexual movement was just beginning to squeak out at that time, and of course the occult was raising its head, and the pastors in our country, they just thought that if you were homosexual, you were just born that way.
Well, now, do you think that there's a spiritual component to homosexuality?
Absolutely. I have cast homosexual spirits out many times. The first book that I wrote on this is a book called Be Free. And in that book, I dealt with witches and lesbians and homosexuals and some very rough type fish. And I think that's probably part of the reason why the pastors didn't receive the ministry, because they just didn't believe it. But the people would be totally regenerated. There's a young man that I went into Key West, and he came into a church where I was speaking, and he and his boyfriend came in, and the Lord had me to speak on that day. And they came up and made the altar call, and he said, well, all the churches down here tell us that we were born that way, and there's nothing we can do about it. And I said, well, I know that there is. And so I ministered to him, and the Lord released him, and one of those boys to this day is on one of those Caribbean islands down there where he has established 27 Protestant Christian churches. And so it certainly is an evil spirit. There is no question in my mind about it.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people would be very, very critical of anybody saying that today. I mean, we're supposed to believe it's some sort of a hormonal imbalance. But I really do believe that this is a spiritual affliction. And I believe that if you care about homosexuals, you have to tell them that. Don't tell them that everything's going to be fine, that just keep doing what you're doing, because they're going to die very young, and they're going to lead a tragic life. There's nothing gay or happy about really having this terrible affliction.
That's right, and the lesbians in the same boat.
Right.
But also over the years, the Lord has brought across my pathway witches and warlocks and occultists in various different levels, and we've been able to see the Lord set those people free, too.
Well, these were, of course, people who realized there was something wrong with it and wanted to get out of witchcraft, because, the witches that I've talked they don't want to get out of it. They like being witches.
Well, there's a torment to it.
Oh, I'm sure there is.
And I wrote a book called Solitary Satanists, and they can find it in ebook form on my webpage, www.patholiday.com. And this young man, he was going to be a preacher, and he sent away to a magazine and got an ad concerning witchcraft because he thought that would be something good to preach about. Well, things started coming to him from all over the world concerning that, and he ended up tearing his altars to the Holy Ghost up and went into witchcraft, and by the time he got to me, he was killing animals and in very, very deep stuff, but he was in it all by himself. He didn't belong to a coven. And one night the Lord came to his bedroom, and he told him, he appeared to him actually, and the boy turned his head away, and he said, "I don't have anything to say to you." And the Lord said, "Well, I've got something to say to you." And he showed him his life like he was in a movie screen of how he was before he got involved in darkness and how he is now. And he said, "Now, which one do you like better?" He said, "Well, I like how I used to be." He said, "But you know, I've tried to get out, but none of the churches or the pastors know what to do for me." He said, "I'm going to send you to a woman, and she'll get you free." And, of course, the rest is history. He came, and the Lord set him free. And so that's the sad part about it, Dr. Stan, is that these things have now taken over our nation, both the homosexual thing, the lesbian thing, and the witchcraft and Satanist thing, and the church just simply wants to dance and sing and say hallelujah and ignore it. Meantime, the devil is coming into Christian homes all over the country and stealing the youth right out from underneath their faces.
Well, there's a recent, I think it was a George Barna study that showed that about 75% of our children, today have experimented in one way or another with the occult, in the Ouija boards, some of the games they play like Bloody Mary, or certainly witchcraft, or certainly even some of our major ministries were saying that the Harry Potter books were fine, and nothing wrong with them, certainly teaching children to read.
Well,
teaching children to read, and because of that, because of those books have been put, and placed in our schools, and even utilized in some of our churches, the difficulty is that so many of our children see nothing wrong with the occult. They watch so many of the motion pictures or television programs that deal with the occult. It really looks sort of exciting. Wouldn't it be wonderful to have that power that is out there just to be claimed?
Well, Dr. Stan, it's not only those things, but the church has brought these occult things right into the church, and in many instances are practicing the occult instead of God's supernaturalism. And as far as the children are concerned, they fill them up with rock music and, look at the movie Narnia. That thing is nothing but pure occultism. I thought I would never live to see the day that I would see the Christian church in America asking Disney World to evangelize our children. And I've had children to come into Miracle that have been to that movie that we have to do deliverance on those children. One little girl came in, and I preached on Narnia that night, and she says, "Auntie," she says, "I got to get rid of my dragons and things in my room." And she said, "I've got a demon." And so when I came down to pray for her, and I put my hand on her head, her little eyes just circled around and around, and she got free. But you see, if you ignore the devil, he doesn't flee from you. He comes in and plays with you. And that's what the problems are that we have in the American church. Now,
it's really so interesting that so many people honestly felt that the Chronicles of Narnia was a Christian film. And it really wasn't. It dealt with the supernatural. It dealt with wizards and all of these people who are tapping into the other dimension. And the fact that most people don't recognize that, and I'm sure many of our ministers didn't recognize this, and everybody says it's a Christian film, so it must be a Christian film. Well, I will tell you, I've been to the occult bookstores, and I've seen there some of the writings of C.S. Lewis, and I'm sure that they carry Tolkien as well. But the average Christian has no idea. After all, if everybody says it's good, it's got to be good. Well, Pat, pick up the story there.
Well, you know, the Narnia thing, the purpose-driven church, Rick Warren, he hired theaters all over the country for the pastors to take their children to see that movie. All of your major ministries on television, international ministries, endorsed it, and I might add, including Brother Kennedy down here in Fort Lauderdale, which I was shocked. Hagee endorsed it. And the unusual thing about that thing is that it was very demonic, and they would just say, well, you know, C.S. Lewis is a Christian. Well, I did research on him, and I'm going to tell you something. He never made a commitment to the Lord. And in his book, The Joy, he calls it The Joy, and in that book, he just simply started out from his house, and by the time he got past the cemetery, he said, he believed in Jesus. But he never made a sold-out commitment to Jesus, and he went to the Catholic Church. Now, you know, we used to know the difference, but evidently Protestants no longer realize the difference. But the saddest part about it is that this, between that and the rock music, I think that the church kids are gone in our nation. It's not like that over on the foreign fields yet. When you go into Africa, and I go into Africa and down in the Caribbean and into the rough places, let me tell you, revival's going on in those places, and they're finding the reality of Jesus because of the fact that these people have grown up in paganism and the occult and witchcraft, and when the light comes in, it's the most beautiful, most powerful light in the world, and they just really, really give themselves to the Lord. I wrote a book called Witch Doctor and the Man, and it's about a fourth generational witch doctor. And this particular man, Samuel Vagelis, they do deliverance in their church. They have 17,000 people in their church over there. And when you come into their church to preach, you get under the anointing and you start preaching, you could have 40 to 50 witches come in and manifest as you're up there preaching. And they just simply go out into the pews and drag them up to the front, cast the demons out of them right in front of everyone.
Well, you know, I think it's really so interesting, Pat. I lived in Africa for a time, and there, of course, you know, they're the witch doctors, very normal. Most of the people go to the witch doctors before they went to the white doctors. And, you know, in less developed countries, there's been many more manifestations of the supernatural and this demonic possession than we saw in the United States until recent years. Now, mm-hmm. You know, 40 years ago, this was not prevalent. Today, I think it's very prevalent. The trouble is that in Africa, they recognize what it is.
That's
here,
exactly
we have
right.
No idea what it is, and we're embracing this. We're having our people try to get into touch with this experiential type of Christianity, and then we go into chants, and we have our praise songs where we actually put ourselves into almost a state almost like the Buddhist state of like a trance-like state. We certainly have a Christian yoga. We have all of these things which are adopting into the Christian faith the practices of the Eastern religions. Well, go ahead, Pat. Pick the story up there.
But you see, they think that you can do these things, that you can engage in these kind of things, Eastern meditation and all kinds of occult things just for fun, like fortune tellers and psychics and all of these things that they involve themselves in, and not be scathed by the powers of darkness. Well, I tell you, you invite them in, and you're going to have to kick them out. And if there's no one to kick them out, then you walk in torment for the rest of your life. And these demons, they can cause sickness, death. They can cause children to be born deformed, all kinds of results from dabbling around in the powers of darkness. And like you said, I wasn't raised in a Christian church. And when I ran for the state legislature in 72, I was not a Christian. I was a conservative. But, you know, I remember going over to Tallahassee and lobbying and debating and seeing a priest come over there with their collars on, with women libbers hanging on their arms, promoting homosexuality and lesbianism. And it flat scared me to death of the Christian church. And so when I got saved in the very beginning, I wouldn't go to the church because I was just absolutely fearful of it. I thought those people were nuts. And you saw no conservative priest and no conservative Protestants over there carrying the torch for our side of the coin, you know. And so America's mixed up, and America's in deep spiritual trouble and political trouble. And we can no longer tell who's who and who's what because there's so many people that are just ritualistically going into the church, and they flat just don't know the Lord anymore.
Well, I think bringing the Christian rock music into our church, and that is frankly satanic, and it is the beat of that music that has an impact on your soul. And of course, you know, in fact, I was reading about the treatment of an American who was arrested over in Iraq on trumped-up charges. He was an FBI informant, and he had actually been telling the truth. So the military took him. They put him into a cell. They kept him cold, lights on all the time. And what do? Loud. They played loud rock music because they know it will have a profound impact on your mind. And it'll drive you crazy after a period of time. And this is what we're giving to our kids all the time. And you'll see these kids walking along, listening to their Walkman, listening to this rock music. And so, you know, their heads bobbing up and down. Well, this is just funneling the devil's music into their soul. And, yeah. And those people who have seen the videos we carry, they sold their souls for rock and roll. Goes into the background of so many of our most prominent and most successful rock musicians who have frankly made a pact with the devil. And they've sold their souls. They've got prosperity. They've got a great deal of money. And, of course, the devil calls in their bargain. Most of them die very, very young. But, you know, this is what's happening to our children, and the churches aren't speaking out. In fact, we've brought that music into the churches all across America, and nobody will speak out against it. Most Christians are afraid to speak out because, after all, if the minister says it's all right, if Rick Warren says it's all right, it must be all right. After all, he's trained 400,000 ministers in his gospel and his music.
Yes, and I'll tell you that all it is mind control. I'm talking about Rick Warren's thing. I've done a lot of research on that, and all it is mind control. And they're using the same kind of principles that they use in corporations to get control of the employees, and they call themselves just warehousing the Christians. And they tell them, don't talk about the gospel, don't talk about Jesus, go in there and just dress in a t-shirt and take all the crosses off the wall, and you might as well be fellowshipping actually in the Moose Lodge or the Elks Lodge, because there's no difference. And the people, it's been so long since the American Christian has heard the gospel, I don't think they'd know it if they heard it anyway.
Well, we've certainly taken the whole idea of sin out of the church, and we certainly want a religion where there's no damnation, there's no judgment. We want a Christianity without a cross, without suffering. And, of course, under those circumstances, you really don't need a Savior. So they've altered the message of Christianity and the music of Christianity, and then we wonder why things are going so bad for us in this country and of course, in our military ventures overseas. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Dr. Pat Holliday, and if you have any questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you right here at Radio Liberty. Well, Pat, how do you get invitations to go into the Caribbean or going to Africa or even getting into churches to be invited to speak?
Well, you know, in this country, I don't get invited. I have appointments all over the world, people call. But the American pastor is so sleepy, and they just think, well, you know, my people are just not ready for this, and I don't know when they're going to get ready for it, to tell you the truth. But they're interested in miracles, but not deliverance. But you see, with me, I walk in both realms. I walk in the supernatural anointing of miracles. I've seen AIDS heal. I've seen five different people raised from the dead right here in this country. Numeral people in the intensive care just raised right up. And cancer and AIDS and multiple sclerosis and you name it. And I've seen God heal it. But then when they find out that you cast devils out, then they're not too interested in you in America. But you know, if Jesus, when he was on the earth, he did both. He healed the sick. But there were times that the healing had to come along with the casting out of the devils. And so I think that if a person has an anointing for casting out devils and miracles, they'll have more miracles than the person that just says that I have a healing ministry. But, you know, in Africa, they beg you to come. They pray and beg. And it's a long way, and then down in the Caribbean, it's close to Africa. I'm talking about in belief systems, you know, except they've got a lot of that Catholic stuff down there. But casting out devils is probably, in my opinion, one of the most needed teachings in this country, and it's really a respectable ministry because you see results from it. But it's just like when Jesus walked on the earth, you know, they said, oh, that fella, he cast out devils by Beelzebub, and he's a whorebibber and all of this stuff. They just didn't have anything good to say about Jesus. And when you cast out devils, that's one of the things you get a lot of flack.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Dr. Pat Holliday, and we'll find out how you can get in touch with her. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Pat Holliday. And Pat, how can people get in touch with your ministry?
Well, they can reach me at 8318.
That's 904-733-8318.
And then they can reach me on the internet at www.patholliday.com.
Okay, fine. Now, do you get a lot of just people who really have problems or come to you, or are most of them, do you think, are directed by the Lord?
Well, my ministry's always been directed by the Lord. One of the very hard things about deliverance in America today is that the people want an instantaneous healing. And sometimes the Lord moves in that way. But other times it's a process. Deliverance, it's like looking at an onion. And some of that stuff just comes off like peeling an onion. And you peel a little bit of it off, and then they walk that out, and then you peel some more. And it's a work. It's a really supernatural work of God. But some of them want to come over like you're an emergency room, and they will go through a deliverance, and then they're back over in the mind-controlled churches, and they get repossessed, unfortunately.
Have you run into any people who have been involved with the intelligence agencies who have been demonically possessed?
You know, I haven't. I've been involved with people that have been under multiples. And
you're talking about multiple personalities.
Yes.
And an association, right.
Right.
Have any of those been victims of these bizarre experiments that government has done?
Mm-hmm. The thing about the multiples, most deliverance ministries do not understand that because they just think everything is a demon. And you know, we would be able to take those people just so far, and then we couldn't get them any further. But the Lord has been showing me things about it, and it's it really is a mental healing. It's as well as casting out the spirits that are layered into them. And when they layer those spirits into them, it's digging. It's digging. We've been ministering to a young man that's a multiple, and he just got free this past Tuesday, and we've been ministering to him for about a month and a half. And we get a little, and then we go a little, and we minister the word to him, and then we go back. And the Lord really does have to teach you this ministry because there's so much going on. And being Americans, we're so limited with what's going on.
Well, now, how did he get to be a multiple? I mean, many times these people are victims of some sort of a satanic ritual abuse.
Well, the way he got to be a multiple, he had gotten into Wicca. And whenever we started casting the Wicca spirits out and ministering to him, then the Lord supernaturally began to show me that he was a multiple. And then his father was into the Indian lore, and the mother was a witch, and the sister's a witch. And so the sister thinks she's a mother moth. I said, "What is that?" And he said, "That's some movie they had out about a moth." My God, but it's very supernatural, and it's like taking a little baby, and you have to just walk with them, and the Lord shows you things, and you do everything you know, and then when you get to a point that you're dealing with something you don't know, then you have to fast and seek the Lord, and He'll show you.
Well, we had one of our friends had a ministry like this, and she just was just so really oppressed and came under so much attack. Her, she came from a satanic family. She started being ritually abused when she was 3 years of age, but recently just had to give it up. She just, you know, it helped so many people, but it was taking such a terrible toll on her. How about you? Is this taking a toll on you?
Well, you know, I teach the Word of God as well as all of this, and fortunately for me, I've had a lot of time to study, and my husband just took care of me so wonderfully when he was alive. And the Lord showed me spiritual warfare. I teach spiritual warfare, and also I teach on intercession. And over the years, I've done a lot of intercession. And to be very honest with you, when I first got into it, I didn't think I was going to survive it. But I do pretty good. I do defensive warfare, and I tell you the truth, Dr. Stan, demons are afraid of Christians that know their authority and their power. The problem is most Christians have never been taught how powerful Jesus is. And demons run from me, to be honest with you. They run from me when I go over in Africa. And if I get into a church in America and get under the anointing, if there's a witch or somebody in there, they'll run. And when they send things to me, I just rise up, take authority, do the things that the Lord has shown me to do, and send it back to wherever it came from, and I do fine. The only thing that has happened to me is about 2 years ago, I went up to Atlanta to minister in a church, And the pastor just called everybody that wanted deliverance up to the front. And I'm up there, and they're all swarming around you. And one of the witches saw that I wasn't being guarded. And I'm ministering and concentrating on the person I'm ministering to. And she just grabbed me by the arm and just started running with me and took a wide circle and dropped me, and I broke my femur in four places. And but the Lord healed me, and I'm doing just fine. I had not been to the doctor in 27 years when that happened to me.
Well, I'm sure the Lord must be looking after you, because you're absolutely right. Christians who are right with the Lord and in a personal relationship with Him can call upon the power of Jesus to counter the demons, but the average individual doesn't understand that, because they do not understand the true nature of the spiritual battle in which we're engaged. This other dimension, and we talk about it frequently on our program, is not imaginary, it's real. I read the publications of the people who are connected to the other dimension. You read the publications of Word Goodwill, or certainly of the Lucius Trust, and they openly talk about their relationship with these supernatural beings, the spiritual hierarchy who rule the world, which are really, of course, demonic beings. And, of course, they actually are able actually to actively influence many of the key people working within our society today, and they will openly admit it. And the fact that it's right there in writing, and I can find it, and yet I dare say that there's probably not one in 100,000 people listening to this program has ever read these things. We'll be glad to send you some copies of it if you want to. It reflects the degree of control that exists over what the people think, and the failure of the church to explain that we live in a world, a material world, but there's a spiritual world there as well. And so I'm glad, Pat, that you're there, and there are other people there. You know, a few other people are doing this, but there are very, very few of the ministries. I can only think of three or four I know in the entire country. There are probably those that I don't know about, but are you in contact with any of the other people in this sort of a ministry?
Well, you know, to be very honest with you, I have one or two people that I speak to over the years. One of the ways that the devil works against the deliverance ministries, I believe, is to keep them separated,
right,
so that they can't learn from one another. There's people that, like Rush Dizdar. I would love to just get to know him and sit and talk to him for a little bit. He knows a lot. He's been around as long as I have, but yet I had never heard of him. But his ministry operates a little bit different than mine, in that he goes out and really chases them down, whereas, the Lord just brings people to me, and then he shows me what to do. I personally, since the time in my bedroom 30 years ago, I have never read an occult book or a witchcraft book. I've written 70 books, but the things that I've written are things that just have happened in the ministry, or things that the Lord has shown me. I think that it's dangerous, and I think that God would use someone like Rush Dizdar to go so that he can educate the people, and he does a wonderful job. I've heard several of his teachings. I can't tell you that I'm in contact, but just with a couple of people.
All right. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you have a question for Pat, and she's good enough to be with us this evening. I think that's so important that we do talk to people who are actually involved in ministries. There are so many hurting people out there. Have you run into people who have perhaps been misdiagnosed as schizophrenic or with other serious mental illness, or actually demonically possessed?
Yes. Schizophrenia is a double-minded person, and the Lord said, I hate double-minded, double-minded person, but all it is it's a split mind that is caused because of some trauma that has happened to the person. It can be induced by a controller or a handler, or it can happen with something terrible happening.
Well, a terrible thing that really creates tremendous fear in the people. And they begin to imagine in all sorts of things.
We see, the way I believe it, I believe that a spirit comes in of fear, and he becomes a gatekeeper. And that's the spirit that is used to layer these personalities into people. And I know that there's a difference in how some people think about this. I believe that those personalities are demonic personalities. Other people, I don't know exactly what they believe, but they don't believe that it is personalities or demonic. But, however, if a person has been under a handler or a controller, you have to take the spirits out of them. The way the Lord showed it to me, Dr. Stan, it was like the mind is split. And then the spirit of fear comes in, and then the handler would open up avenues into the mind of different types of personalities.
But who is the handler ordinarily be?
Well, it would be the controller. It would be the military person that is trying to control the minds of people. And right today, I believe that that's what we're looking at in the churches, are controllers that are controlling the minds of the people, because I see whole churches sitting under hypnotic powers, and that's what they use, is hypnosis, hypnotic powers, to get into the minds of the people. But I believe that there are new avenues made in those minds. And these various personalities that are layered in, they may not even know each other, or that they're in there, you know. And so it takes a long time to get these kind of people free, because it's a little here, and they walk it out, and then it's a little there. Now, we've had better results recently than we have had with multiples. I am wide open to talk to anybody in the ministry that is working with multiples, because I feel that deliverance ministries need more training in that particular area, because it's not only casting out devils and it's all over, because these people have been emotionally abused. And they go through so much rejection and insecurity and things of that nature. They have to be healed physically, mentally, and spiritually. And so it's much, much more, I believe, than deliverance ministries are equipped to handle, at least the few that I've known over my life. And but I think that multiple personalities can certainly be delivered. I believe the codes can be wiped out of their minds. I believe that you can make them just as whole as anybody else in the world, because Jesus is not going to do a halfway job. He's not going to just minister to you a little today and let you stay a multiple. He wants you totally set free. And if there's some deliverance that's needed, go to someone that cast out devils. And then if you know somebody that knows a little bit about how to bring you through inner healing, and I don't believe in the inner healing where they bring you into hypnosis and take you back to your childhood and that sort of thing. But I believe that there is more to all of this than meets the eye. And I'm certainly always willing to minister and always willing to learn.
Well, I'm so glad that there are people like you, Pat, you know, that are out there that can do this, because this is a calling. It's not something that I would personally be able to do. I can recognize this, but fortunately, or unfortunately, I think fortunately for me, I haven't been called to do that. I've been called to be on the radio, but at least to give a voice to people who are on the front lines of this spiritual battle. And the great tragedy of today is most of our ministers really do not recognize the fact that there is a demonic possession, and it's not occasional. It's very frequently here in this country. Now, it wasn't here 40 years ago when I got started. And when I first began studying about this, it was primarily from learning about it from the ministers who had been in other countries who came in contact with people who are demonically possessed. But that sure isn't true today, is it?
No, it isn't. And these portals and these gateways are opening up all over the country now because of mass education in Satanism and the occult. They get it in rock records and movies, television. Everywhere you turn around, somebody's teaching somebody how to do witchcraft.
Yeah, and of course, even backward masking, we've actually got some videotapes that show the backward masking that they actually have on those records that our kids listen to. And of course, that couldn't have been put in accidentally. It had to be by supernatural intelligence.
Right, right.
Well, let's survive. We've got Tom calling from Santa Cruz. Let's take a quick call from Tom here. Hi, go ahead, Tom. Tom, are you there? Do you have a quick question?
Hello, yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we're just about out of time.
Yes, I wanted to ask your guest, is there any danger in Catholicism?
Yes.
What kind?
Well, you have the power of idolatry in that, and over the years we've ministered to many people that have come out of idolatry and ritualism, and a lot of the things that are involved in Catholicism are extra biblical knowledge, and some of those things have sprung off from the Babylonian religion. And so there's a lot of deliverance that can be involved in that particular spirit.
So I'm curious, somebody who promotes Catholicism and says they're a Christian, are they deluded?
Well, you know, back in the 70s, the Lord moved across America and saved a lot of Catholics. And back in those days, Dr. Stan can remember, we were fighting against the spirit of abortion or the powers of abortion in the women's livers. And the Catholics stood up and stood against that particular spirit all over the nation when we couldn't find Protestants that would even let us use their church to speak. But the Lord moved all over the world and saved an awful lot of Catholics. And I believe they had true conversions of being born again and filled with the Holy Ghost, and I've known a lot of them that are, but I can't sit here and tell you that I believe that all Catholics are born again, because I know that they're not.
Okay, Tom, well, thank you so much for your call.
May I ask
right
one
now,
more question, please?
Thank you very much for being with us, Pat. I appreciate your taking the time to be with us, and hope we can get a chance to be with you again. Are any of your books, your books available for sale at your website? Or?
Yes, they're available. We have softback books, and we also have e-books that are available, and newsletters, and MP3s, all kinds of things are up there.
All right, fine. And that's, again,
www.PatHolliday with two L's. Pat, HOLLIDAY.
All right, L's.
Uh-huh. And they can also find me on www.agapepublishers.com.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and again, Pat Holliday's website is www.PatHolliday.com. She's got all sorts of books, MP3s, tape sets, and I'm just glad that there are people like Pat that are out there on the front lines of this very real battle. And this is what people really don't understand, is that there really is this spiritual battle that's going on today, and we're on the front lines of it. Now, we actually carry great deal of information. We have a book written by a man who's not necessarily a Christian at all, but it's called The CIA Doctor. It used to be called Operation Bluebird. It was named for a CIA mind control experiment. But the CIA Doctors is based upon, you know, the some 18,000 pages of CIA files on their mind control experiments. We have the complete 18,000 pages on a CD. If you want to get that, you can just ask for the CD with the 18,000 pages on it. We actually carry the book Access Denied, Kathy O'Brien's story of being a sex slave for the CIA. Her book on transformation of America mentions some of the very prominent people, including a president of the United States, who, of course, are accepting favors from these people, how the CIA was using them. We, of course, have a 4-tape set on mind control. We have government investigation, 1973, a church committee investigations of MK Ultra and mind control here in America. And you must understand there really is another dimension. If you've never read the book by Father Malachi Martin entitled Hostage to the Devil, it's the story of 5 exorcisms, and you can get that along with my 4 interviews with Father Martin, the Father Malachi Martin special, or the Malachi Martin special. This is not imaginary. And if you read the book Hostage to the Devil, and I first read it back in the early 1980s, and it really began to open my eyes to the fact there is another dimension. We actually we have a 4-tape set called the Supernatural. It's interviews with Joanna Michelson, and Joanna was actually a medium, and she was being trained to become a psychic healer, and she saw the most amazing miracles that were actually performed by a woman who was demonically possessed. That's the Supernatural 4-tape set. I think you'll find it well worthwhile. We carry Johanna's books. One of them is called The Beautiful Side of Evil. She has another book on education, what's going on in our schools today. We have a 4-tape set on Aleister Crowley. He was a Satanist. We're now carrying the book, and we finally have it in print, Satanic Crimes. Satanic Crimes talks about certainly Charles Manson and David Berkowitz and of course, Rodriguez, the Hillside Strangler. But did you know, for instance, that the Bilderbergers over there in Europe are tied into Satanism and pedophilia? They had a demonstration, I think it was 350,000 people demonstrating against the Bilderbergers in Europe, and not a word of it in the American press. I wonder why. Satanic Crimes is a book you'll really want to get and you want to read it. William Kennedy did a great job with the book, and I think it's an important addition to our armamentarium of trying to get people to understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And barring supernatural intervention, I don't see any way that America, our way of life, is going to be preserved, and I'm sure Dr. God does not want it preserved in its present form of idolatry and perversion, and certainly in a society such as ours where we're told that homosexuality is perfectly normal. How dare you speak out against it when these people are actually, many of them are demonically possessed, and this whole thing is energized by organized evil, and the devil is going to claim their lives at a young age. The average homosexual dies at 41 to 42. If you care about homosexuals, you've got to tell them what they're doing is wrong. And most people just don't want to do it. They don't want to be controversial. They don't want to do what we're doing. Well, please go to our website, radioliberty.com. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Have a wonderful and happy new year. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views and the views of our guests, the views of our callers. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls, and unless, of course, we open the lines up. Later on, our guest this evening is Arthur Birnbaum, with a Veterans for the Constitutional Law. Right now, though, before we got into our discussion with Arthur about Veterans Affairs, I wanted to read you a poem, one of my favorites. There's a graveyard near the White House where the unknown soldier lies, and the flowers there are sprinkles with the tears from mother's eyes. I stood there not so long ago with roses for the brave, and suddenly I heard a voice speak out from the grave. I am the unknown soldier, the spirit voice began, and I think I have the right to ask some questions man to man. Are my buddies being taken care of? Was their victory so sweet? Is that big reward you offered selling pencils on the street? Did they really win the freedom they battled to achieve? Do you still respect the Croix de Guerre above the empty sleeve? Does a gold star in the window now mean anything at all? I wonder how my old girl feels when she hears a bugle call. And that baby who sang, "Hello, Central, give me no man's land." Can they replace her daddy with a military band? I wonder if the profiteers have satisfied their greed. I wonder if a soldier's mother ever is in need. I wonder if the kings who planted all are really satisfied. They played their game of checkers, and 11 million died. I am the unknown soldier, and maybe I died in vain. But if I were alive and my country called, I'd do it all over again. And I think that really, in many ways, reflects the attitude of the people in the military. They're doing a good job. They've won the war in Vietnam. They were betrayed by our leaders who were financing the communists were financing the North Vietnamese who were killing our boys. It's going on today in Afghanistan where our troops are fighting. They're being attacked and killed by the Taliban, who, of course, are being financed and supplied by the Pakistani intelligence, the ISI, which is being funded by your government. Yes, we give $600 million a year in direct aid, and I don't know how much in black budgets, to the Pakistani government and the Pakistani ISI that's financing the Taliban, that are killing our boys, and they go north into Afghanistan, they kill our boys and the NATO soldiers there, and then they fade back into Pakistan, and they're protected by international law. What's wrong with this picture? It's Vietnam all over again, that the average individual can't see it because nobody is telling you, and our boys are doing the best they can. They've been blocked at every turn by our leaders who have a different agenda. After all, what would happen if in New York, why, you dissolve the army and you dissolve the civil service, and there was no army there to establish law and order? What would happen? You'd have chaos. And that's exactly what Paul Bremer, the Council on Foreign Relations, did when he went into Baghdad on the 1st of May 2003, after our military had won the war. Paul Bremer, formerly of Kissinger and Associates, why, of course, set up the chaos that exists today. But these boys are coming back, and I think they deserve to be taken care of. A third of the soldiers who are returning from Iraq today within 3 months are ill, deadly ill, and many are unable to take care of themselves. And all shucks, nobody in the military has any idea what's wrong with them. They must be crazy. Well, our guest is Arthur Birnbaum. Arthur, so good to have you with us again.
Pleasure to do a program with you once again, Dr. Stan.
Will you pick up the story and tell us what the latest things are? Because actually there is some good news out there, so you tell us about it.
We've got a lot of good news tonight. Let's first talk about the Iraq veterans that fall through the cracks in our system. This is from Forbes.com. The Iraq veterans are falling through health care cracks. Now, Wednesday, December 20th, this is on Health Day News. Sergeant Jason Pepper returned from the conflict in Iraq with a traumatic brain injury, symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder, and a desperate need for help in navigating the United States health care system. But like so many of his peers, Pepper, who was also blinded in a blast from an improvised explosive device, is now largely invisible in a system ill-equipped to deal with the type and magnitude of injuries shown up in veterans returning from Iraq, according to a report published in the December 21st issue of the New England Journal of Medicine. He has sort of fallen through the cracks as far as medical care goes, said Dr. Susan Oakey, contributing editor of the New England Journal of Medicine. He has made physically a fairly remarkable recovery considering how badly he was wounded, but he has significant residual medical problems and symptoms. Pepper, along with Sergeant David Emmy, were first profiled in the pages of the journal last year while undergoing treatment and rehabilitation at Walter Reed Army Medical Center in Washington, D.C. Emmy also has a traumatic brain injury, TBI, and symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder, which is PTSD, as a result of his service in Iraq. Oakey revisited the two men, this time in their homes. Pepper, an hour outside of Nashville, Tennessee, and Emmy, north of Allentown, Pennsylvania. Pepper and Emmy are among some 22,600 U.S. soldiers who have been wounded in the conflicts in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other locations, most commonly by blasts. 59% of those injured by blasts have been found to have a TBI, which has been called the signature wound of this war. This and other features of the conflicts may be overwhelming the veterans' health care system. There are probably more people like these two guys who have a combination of PTSD and TBI, and that's probably something the VA has not seen much in numbers like that before, Oakey said. Because of the body armor, there is a higher survivor rate of those with multiple wounds, so a bigger influx of those with severe injuries and maybe
hold
head
that,
injuries.
Hold that off right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Arthur is simply reading to us an article out of the newspaper about so many of our young men coming back from Iraq today have severe head injuries. They're surviving. Certainly in past years, they wouldn't have survived. The body armor is protecting them,
right.
But they're coming back with permanent metal deficiency. In other words, they've had a head injury, and their mind doesn't work. Their body works fine. It's their mind. Their mind is damaged and many times beyond repair. And yet they're now thrust into civilian life. Their families have to look after them. The Veterans Administration is prepared. Really doesn't know what to do, doesn't have the facilities. Go ahead, Arthur. Finish your article.
Well, head injuries and amputations and multiple wounds, so a bigger influx of these with severe injuries and maybe amputation of wounds to the limbs. The VA's obviously got a big burden of people recovering from severe injuries, more than in previous conflicts. The nature of the wounds is completely different because of the improvised explosive devices, added Phil Kraft, who was the program director for the National Veterans Service Fund in Darien, Connecticut. The guys who are injured to this extent in Vietnam are dead. Those guys are being saved when ordinarily they wouldn't have made it. The VA system is designed for soldiers who took a bullet, stuff like that, and these are not your traditional wounds. The VA's plans for a seamless transition from military to civilian health care are largely unrealized. About 80% of soldiers recently discharged after serving in Iraq have not even been enrolled as patients in the VA system. Pepper, a former Army combat engineer, hasn't seen a doctor since he left Walter Reed in September 2005, more than a year ago. He did enroll with TRICARE, an agency that administers a national health care plan for military personnel, veterans, and their families, but said he was unable to contact the civilian primary care physician that TRICARE referred him to. Pepper takes escalating doses of a barbiturate pain medication left over from Walter Reed, along with medications to reduce his anxiety and help him sleep. At the same time, he's cut his daily antidepressant dose in half and has gained 50 or so pounds since his discharge from Walter Reed. He feels he can't exercise safely because he can't see. Emmy also has not seen a doctor since his discharge. His headaches have largely disappeared since his skull was reconstructed, but he still has muscle twitching, a result of his brain injury, sleep apnea, and anxiety, which may be a symptom of PTSD. Emmy also enrolled in TRICARE, but has yet to follow up with a civilian neurologist. Neither Pepper nor Emmy has a case manager to ensure continuity of care. Everybody is trying to come up with a system that involves case managers to try to help them stay on top, but they're not using them, Oki said. Theoretically, they could both get them by simply arranging it, and it's hard to say precisely where or how people are slipping through the cracks. Just the sheer size of the caseload is unbearable for any healthcare organization, Kraft said. I couldn't with any conscience point my finger at the VA and say they're doing this on purpose. They're trying, they really are, but they're not being given enough money. Now, how the hell are you going to take care of these people if there's no money to do it? They're always willing to send young men and women over there. It's just they do not think it all the way through, and this is what's happening outside to these guys returning from the war.
And I think it's really important to realize that there's an economist. He's a Nobel Prize-winning economist. His name is Dr. Joseph Stiglitz, and we've read his books. We think he's a brilliant man. He has analyzed the cost of this war. He said initially it would cost between $1 and $2 trillion. Not only, of course, for the war itself, but then to take care of the veterans afterwards. Now, that's $2 trillion we don't have. And now he's saying it will cost over $2 trillion. And that and means that the war ends by the end of next year. If it doesn't end by the end of next year, why it'll even be more than that? Ladies and gentlemen, we're having to borrow over $3.5 billion every day simply to meet the obligations and debts of our government. We're committing more and more men to battle. More and more are going to be killed. But not only those who are killed, but those who are coming home are going to need care. With these permanent mental changes, these permanent loss of a limb or blindness or deafness, has anybody thought through the implications, of this terrible, terrible waste of human life? And then the finances needed. We do not have $1 trillion to put into this. We do not have $2 trillion. And what happens if the system fails? What happens to these people then? Go ahead, pick up the story there, Arthur.
Okay. Now, the House Veterans Affairs Committee we were talking about improvements and good news. Now, we have just passed a law which we have just overruled the law which has been in effect for 75 years with the VA. Veterans have been forbidden to have attorneys for 75 years. It was part of the VA's United States Code Title 38. It was called Section 5904. Now, we just got this through both houses of Congress, and the President has signed the bill. Now, we've had a lot of opposition on here, coming out of the chairman of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, who was Mr. Bush's hand-picked chairman, Steve Beyer of Indiana. Steve Beyer and I have had conflict with each other for about 8 years now. And tell you a little bit about Mr. Steve Beyer. Steve Beyer is a reserve JAG officer, Judge Advocate General. He's got a psychopathic hatred of veterans. And Steve Beyer was picked when we had a decent chairman, Christopher Smith of New Jersey, but Mr. Bush was so afraid that Christopher Smith would be too liberal with veterans' benefits that he kicked him out of his job and he put Beyer in, and Beyer has done nothing but cause trouble for veterans all over the country.
Arthur, let me just explain to our listeners out there who don't understand. If you are a veteran and you want to apply for Veterans Administration benefits, you get into the system, you apply, and then they ignore your application, and eventually maybe you get a hearing, but you cannot have legal representation. The Veterans Administration has thousands of lawyers to fight you, but you're not allowed to have a lawyer to represent you until you've gone through the entire system. How long can that take before you can actually get into a real court?
Thank you very much, Dr. Stan. That explains it perfectly. The VA has 12,000 lawyers, and veterans were not allowed to have an attorney represent them at all. And they had to be referred through the VA to the service organizations like the American Legion, the Disabled American Veterans, the Veterans of Foreign Wars. These organizations are called chartered by the VA and Congress, and they are supposed to represent veterans in their claims against the VA. However, they're all in bed with each other. The VA's favorite organizations, the three favorites, are the DAV, the American Legion, and the VFW. But they've got like 46 different chartered service organizations, and many of these cases are very complex and need an attorney. And throwing this over to the service organizations has done nothing for veterans. In fact, only 4% of all veterans who are applying for claims have actually won their cases with the system the way it was. Now, we've got some unexpected help from people that we didn't. We were very surprised. I have to say kudos to Senator Larry Craig of Idaho, the chairman of the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee. He not only pushed this bill through unanimously, but him and Senator Daniel Akaka of Hawaii approached all the members of the House Veterans Affairs Committee and persuaded them that veterans have been tortured with this law for 75 years, and veterans were actually being raped by the VA on their charges, and did not stand much of a chance of winning their case unless they had attorneys. And finally, this was pushed through the House Veterans Affairs Committee with only two votes going against it. Steve Beyer, of course, who has this hatred of veterans, and another fellow by the name of Representative Michaud, M-I-C-H-A-U-D, of Maine. He is a Democrat, and this is another oddball on that committee.
All right, now, of course, once it got on the floor of the House of Representatives, how did the vote go?
Once it got onto the floor, everybody except these two people approved the new law.
In other words, here you got unanimous control, unanimous vote by the Senate. All but two of the members of the House of Representatives vote in favor of the legislation that a disabled veteran has the right, when he goes to a legal a hearing, whether 12,000 lawyers on one side, at least he has a right to have one lawyer on his side. But this has been going on for 75
years.
They've used the administrative process effectively to deprive certainly our veterans of their benefits. And George Bush put a man in who specifically, and they keep talking about how concerned about the veterans, we love our veterans, but he actually put a man in there. One of the two people who voted against the legislation.
Yeah.
Only two people in the whole House, and one of them was George Bush's appointment. So you know very well how George Bush really feels.
Oh.
Never believe what a person says.
Watch
and see what they do. And when the President of the United States points a man, only two who vote against the veterans, you know what the President's real position is, irrespective of what he says.
We've all known this for a while, Dr. Stan, what Mr. Bush thinks and what his position is.
Right, and of course the whole idea is how are we going to prevent the disabled veterans from getting any care for the war that we sent you to, a senseless war we never should have gotten into, and when you come back and you're crippled and your mind or your limbs or your sight or your hearing is gone, why, you're not going to get any care. We're going to tie you up in these administrative hearings for dozens of years. And they go on and they go on and they go on. Thanks to Mr. Bush. Well, I think that's really rather exciting that this legislation got through, that now the veteran can does he have to hire the lawyer himself, or does the Veterans Administration...
Don't want the Veterans Administration to have anything to do with it. In fact, the Veterans Administration is struggling with us now. They want to maintain control that the Veterans Administration will have the say-so on who he hires and who he doesn't hire, and we're saying, no, sir, this system has been adversarial since day one. And we don't want the Veterans Administration to have any control over this at all. This should be a free choice of the veterans. And, this has been an adversarial system since day one, and the chief adversary has been the VA. And now they're trying to maintain control over this, and we simply won't let them.
Now, I think it's what's so interesting is, didn't almost all of the Veterans Administration, all the veterans organizations, betray the veterans and side with the VA?
Oh, God, yes. Oh, well, they're doing that because they have another part of Title 38 called Section 5902A, which is called the Gravy Train Statute, which gives them free rental in every VA building and hospital. It gives them free furniture, free computer equipment, free postage, free telephone, free stationery, a tax-exempt status, a staff to run their office. It's incredible all the freebies they get. And what do they have to do to earn these freebies? Just betray their fellow veterans. And the biggest betrayers are the three I mentioned before, the DAV, the VFW, and the American Legion. But the rest of them aren't too good either. Now, we're hailing this bill as the most wonderful thing to happen for veterans. It's a $3.2 billion, it's called the Veterans Omnibus Bill, S-3421. They amended it. There was some compromises in that. And it took effect. It was voted on December 8th and signed by the president. And it does not fully become effective for 180 days from December 8th. But it will be effective at that point. Now, Congress worked in a bipartisan effort to pass this important bill, and the winners are the veterans and their families. And right now that they passed it, Steve Beyer, the guy that Bush appointed, is claiming credit for passing this bill. Steve Beyer did everything he could to submarine this bill. And thank God that you have people around like Senator Craig of Idaho and Senator Rakaka of Hawaii, and it's sort of restored my faith in Congress.
Well, they really can accomplish something, and I think this was something that I think most of our duly elected representatives feel strongly about, that they want to take care of the men who are coming home. It was only the president and his appointee there, one of the two congressmen who voted against this, out of the entire House of Representatives. So I hope that you're going to get that message out far and wide, how President Bush really feels about our servicemen.
Oh, Bush and his representative Beyer did all they could to submarine this whole thing. They wanted to just knock this whole thing off. And I'm going to read you some letters that have come in from the Disabled American Veterans Organization about this. And people are going to be shocked to hear this. And here's
hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment when we bring our stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan Arthur. He's going to read us some letters from the Disabled American Veterans Organizations. And, of course, the trouble is that the organizations that are supposed to be representing the veterans have been betraying them for years. They've been bought off by goodies, and I suspect they've got people planted within the Veterans Administrations so that the veterans would think, the public would think, of course, that we've got these organizations representing the veterans. They really haven't. They've been working against them for years. Because it's too expensive to provide all the benefits that they promised. But, of course, we can't let the servicemen who go off to fight for America realize when they come home, they're going to be betrayed by their own leaders. So pick up the story there, Arthur.
Okay, well, here's one given to us by one of our board members, Patrick Kelly. The infighting started Tuesday, June the 6th of 2006. Lisa Bogle, an executive, that's B-O-G-L-E. I want to identify all four of these people who are writing these letters. Attorneys and Claim Process, June 6, 2006. Take action. Legislation has been introduced in both the House and the Senate known as the Veterans Choice of Representation Act, H.R. 4914 and S-2694. These bills would amend Title 38 United States Code to remove certain limitations on attorney representation of claimants for veterans benefits in administrative proceedings before the VA. The reason this legislation has been introduced, according to staff from both House and Senate Veterans Affairs Committees, is that veterans have been complaining about not having the right to hire an attorney to represent them during the claims process. The Disabled American Veterans, the DAV, is concerned that the current claims process does not work properly. We believe Congress should focus on correcting the process and not making it more adversarial and legalistic. The question should not be whether veterans have a right to hire an attorney, but how to improve claims processing. Clearly, the solution is not to allow attorneys into the process. This is coming from the DAV.
Yeah, they're the people with the 12,000 attorneys.
Yep. That's
and
right.
They don't want the veteran to have an attorney
nope,
to represent
not at
himself.
All.
It's already adversarial. And the thing is that here is an example of somebody professing to be so concerned about the veterans, whereas they're really trying to block the legislation that you got through.
It's terrible. The VA benefits delivery system was designed to be open, informal, and helpful to veterans. Now, if it is, how come only 4% of the veterans have been winning their cases? The goal was to ensure that veterans receive the benefits a grateful nation has provided for them, rather than discourage or inhibit their claims with government red tape or lengthy litigation. Allowing attorneys into the process would interfere with this goal and will create a system that is more adversarial and legalistic and less veteran-friendly. I urge you to write to your representative and senators urging them to oppose the enactment of this bill and to truly focus the attention of Congress on ways to ensure the process performs in the manner for which it was designed. An ex parte, that means a party of one, non-adversarial system, with VA being obligated to provide all benefits allowable under the law. And this is from Lisa Bogle, June 6th. That was the first...
Now, she is with the Disabled American... She's with the Disabled American Veterans?
Yes, she's an executive with the Disabled American Veterans.
In other words, they were writing to the veterans, pleading with them to write to their elected representatives to oppose the legislation that would have helped the veterans, saying, oh my goodness, you know, we just
exactly.
want to improve it. There's no way to improve it without legal representation. With only 4% of the people getting it, you know, could it get much worse if they had an attorney?
Nope.
No, it's not that it, you know, it would get worse. It would get better for the veterans, and that's the last thing they want.
That's right.
Go ahead.
Now, on August 18th, a second round was fired, and this one was from National Commander of the DAV, Bradley S. Barton, saying, lawyers' bill unwarranted, costly to veterans. Federal legislation that would allow lawyers to charge veterans for helping them file a claim for benefits from the VA is unnecessary and would increase cost to veterans, said Disabled American Veterans National Commander Bradley S. Barton. Barton, who himself is an attorney and a veterans advocate, said veterans should not have to hire and pay a lawyer to help them with the largely administrative claims process, which is designed to be open, informal, and helpful to veterans. That'll be the day. The so-called Veterans Choice of Representation Act is unnecessary, and involvement of lawyers would increase costs to veterans and to the VA without significantly improving the process, Barton said. The VA is required to assist veterans in completing and filing the relatively informal application for benefits and then takes the initiative to advance the claim through the appropriate steps. Barton explained, in addition, veterans can get free help from the DAV's professionally trained national service offices or other organizations in navigating the VA claims process. Why should you have to navigate the process? The VA itself is opposed to the legislation, noting that attorney fees would consume significant amounts of payments under programs meant to benefit veterans.
Hold that, we'll be right back.
Okay.
Well, this is Arthur Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest is Arthur Burdenflower, and he's simply reading us a series of letters that have come from the so-called veterans organizations. Not veterans organizations, they're shills for the government. They've got people planted in them to undercut the position of the veterans and to cut the rights that they're entitled to, having served for our country and come back permanently injured. And they're doing everything they can to discourage this legislation being passed because the administration didn't want to pass. The Veterans Administration didn't want to pass.
Oh, no.
Why? Because they did not want to give the veterans the benefits they were entitled to. So here are your veterans organizations on the side of the government against the veterans. Pick up the story there.
The betrayal is incredible. The VA itself is opposed to the legislation, noting that attorney fees would consume significant amounts of payments on the programs meant to benefit veterans, Barton said. The VA would have to create a substantial new bureaucracy to perform additional accreditation with oversight responsibilities. Instead, the VA should use its scarce resources to hire more claims adjudicators and provide them with the training needed to improve the quality as well as the timeliness of decisions. Congress placed the duty on the VA to ensure all alternative theories of entitlement are exhausted and all laws and regulations pertinent to the case are considered and applied. Currently, veterans may hire an attorney for advice and counseling prior to filing a claim for benefits or after the VA administrative proceedings have been completed. Besides, there's no evidence that attorneys would provide service superior to that rendered by veteran service organizations. In fiscal year 2005, for example, the Board of Veterans Appeals granted one or more of the benefits sought in 21.3% of the appeals in which claimants were represented by attorneys who have the luxury of handpicking their clients. The Board granted one or more of the benefits sought in 22.3% of the cases in which a claimant was represented by a veteran service organization. By the way, these figures are found out to be phony. The 1.3 million member Disabled American Veterans, a nonprofit organization founded in 1920 and chartered by the U.S. Congress in 1932, represents this nation's disabled veterans. It is dedicated to a single purpose, building better lives for our nation's disabled veterans and their families. Oh, what a load of, But anyway, another letter came in on August 29th, and the other letter came in from Joseph Violante, the National Legislative Director, who himself is a lawyer.
All right, now hold that. We're going to get to that in just a moment here. We want to bring other stations back on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan and our guest this evening, Arthur Burdenflower from Veterans for Constitutional Law. Arthur, why don't you go ahead, put your telephone number out, your webpage out. How can people get in touch with you? Because Arthur has dedicated himself to helping the veterans, and this is the reason we put him on. He's doing a good job. He's actually, getting legislation through. He's on the front lines of the battle. He's not paid for what he does, as so many of these other people who are shills for the government, supposedly representing the veterans, and actually selling them out. Arthur, how can people get in touch with you?
Okay, I'm probably the most accessible person in the veterans movement that you can reach. I'm Arthur Burdenflower. I'm executive director of Veterans for Constitutional Law. That's our organization. It's Veterans for Constitutional Law Limited, and we're located at 112 Jefferson Avenue in Port Jefferson, New York, 11777. That's 112 Jefferson Avenue in Port Jefferson, New York, 11777, and I can be reached at this telephone number, 631-474-4261, 631-474-4261, and all calls will be answered or the call will be returned to you. And we want to talk to you about any problems that you may be having with the VA, and anyone who wants to donate to us, they have a full tax deduction. We're a 501(c), and you have a full tax deduction on this, and you will be helping veterans, and we're with an organization that pays $1 a year to any of our volunteers or anyone who works for us. That's all we ever get paid here. And what we do is we try to help veterans push their claims through.
All right, and certainly Arthur's helped an awful lot of veterans who couldn't get help elsewhere. And the system is stacked against them because the administration, successive administrations, have created all these phony veterans organizations, not to help them, but to placate them, to try to keep them from being effective in their claims. And then they write letters like the one you just heard. They're telling about all the people that are getting claims through. And actually, without a lawyer, only about 4% of the people have got their claims through. And how long does it ordinarily take before you exhaust that technique and you can't get into a court?
Generally, you should be able to push this thing through in 90 to 120 days if they were doing it honestly. But we have claims that have gone 20, 30, 40 years or more, and claims have been remanded 8 or 9 times each. They remanded from the Veterans Court back to the Board of Appeals. The Board of Appeals remands it back to the regional office. And an average of this is going like 7, 8, 9 times remands. And they'll keep a veteran running on the rat wheel forever and ever until he either dies or he gets so frustrated that he gives up his claim out of disgust. This is the game plan, pure and simple, with the VA. And what they have tried to do to me and to my organization, my telephone lines have been tapped for the last 8 years. They have tapped my telephone lines, and I've gone to court 4 times. I've had the tap taken off, and they put the tap line right back on several weeks later.
Isn't that illegal?
Of course. It's illegal, but if the Justice Department gives you a tap, let me tell you what they said. If the Justice Department taps your phone, we cannot give you a permanent injunction against the Justice Department. The only time they can do something is if somebody else is tapping your phone. But they will not give a permanent injunction against the Justice Department, and they work hand-in-hand with the VA, and if the VA is sued by anyone outside, guess who defends them? Not VA lawyers. The Justice Department defends the VA.
And of course,
I call them just us, Dr. Stan.
Now, really what we have is, unfortunately, we have some very evil and wicked people working within the administration. It doesn't matter whether they're Democrats or Republicans. There are wicked people working at the highest levels of our government who are not interested in providing for our veterans, but are interested in blocking their efforts to get benefits. Well, certainly you have one more letter there you wanted to read.
Okay, and here, Mr. Violante, who is the legislative director of the Disabled American Veterans, and he's writing to the Honorable Steve Beyer. He's the same chairman of the House Veterans Affairs Committee that we discussed before. Dear Chairman Beyer, I read with interest and much indignation of the August 21st, 2006 letter sent to you by former Chief Judge Frank Hugh Nebiger. Now, Frank Hugh Nebiger is a good man, and he was the head judge of the Veterans Court. And it's written here, it is unfortunate that after 11 years of service as Chief Judge of the Court of Veterans Appeals, which is now the United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, former Chief Judge Nebiger apparently still does not understand the significance of Congress's intent to create a system for veterans. It should be abundantly clear to anyone that Congress intended that it would remain a veteran-friendly, ex parte, party of one, non-adversarial claims processing system, notwithstanding the creation of the Veterans Court. Did you ever hear such double talk in your life, Dr. Stan? Over the years, in various ways, the court has improperly tried to impose formal procedures on the informal administrative claims process at the Department of Veterans Affairs, such as declining to consider legal points not pleaded by the claimant in claims proceedings at VA and the Board of Veterans Appeals. The court also misinterpreted the well-grounded claim requirement, eliminating the VA's duty to assist veterans, and nearly brought the claims process to a complete standstill until Congress took positive action to reinstate the VA's duty to assist. Judge Nebiger contends that the VA system is paternalistic and it demeans our veterans. And Judge Nebiger is right, because it denies them the right to hire an attorney. The truth of the matter is that bad public policy to allow veterans to pay a fee to obtain their earned profits, their earned benefits. Furthermore, it demeans the service of our brave young men and women who defend our cherished freedoms to convince them that it's necessary to pay a lawyer to represent them to obtain the benefits to which they're entitled. This is such a bunch of double talk, Dr. Stan, that's coming out of Joe Violante. It doesn't even make sense to read this entire letter, because people I know who are listening to this are getting disgusted with this. Now,
oh, I think the major thing is that this is the double talk. The people in the veterans organizations are actively against the veterans having a fair shake within the very, very complicated legal system. The veterans system is set up not to provide care, not to provide benefits, but to block the veterans from getting it, and to put them on this treadwheel where they run around and run around, and then, of course, they can never get the hearing, and if you can't get the final determination, then you can't get to have a lawyer, and this can go on for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. What do you do with your family at that time? How do you live if you're disabled or partially disabled?
You have to go on public assistance. That's exactly what they do. They force veterans' families to go on public assistance.
And then, of course, my understanding is now they want to try to buy out their veterans' benefits. Whatever happened to that idea, Mr. Byers?
Oh, yes. Mr. Byer has been pushing that to buy out for a lump sum payment of 30% of what the veteran would receive for the rest of his life, to have a buyout of his disability, and he's been really pushing this hard. But now that he's out of there, I don't know how far they're going to get. But this is with Mr. Bush's approval, by the way. Mr. Bush has pulled up out of the past David Stockman, and David Stockman was the director of Office of Management and Budget, OMB, who came up with this originally for veterans. He came up with this for military retirees, and they've...
That was during the Reagan administration, wasn't it?
That's right. He was called the whiz kid of the Reagan administration.
And of course, the whole idea is that people are desperate for many, many, many times will foolishly sign away their benefits and their birthright for a certain number of thousands of dollars, maybe get $30,000 or $40,000 or $50,000. But, of course, then the rest of your life, why, what you've been entitled to and promised is gone, and they will get it, of course, back. It's just a fragment of what it will cost the government if you didn't take it. But hoping you'll be desperate enough, you'll actually sign away your birthright.
You know, people are not aware of the fact that OMB, the Office of Management and Budget, they pull the strings for the VA. They give the orders. They're like Geppetto, and the VA is like Pinocchio. And all these ideas come out of the Office of Management and Budget. And, Mr. Stockman didn't get too far in the Reagan administration with this, and now between Mr. Bush and Mr. Beyer and Mr. Cheney, they have resurrected the philosophy of David Stockman, and they have the backing of Grover Norquist, another man in government here.
Yeah, well, don't tell me about Grover Norquist. I know him personally. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. It's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Grover Norquist has been taking money from the various radical Islamic movements, to finance his conservative activities, and I guess being a propagandist for the enemies of this country, in my estimation.
Den of thieves, Dr. Stan, a den of thieves. Now, there's something all else going on now that people should be made aware of. The Veterans Administration begins collecting DNA for large-scale gene bank. The Veterans Administration is now collecting DNA from veterans and linking the information to their medical records. Now, who gets this information? Drug companies? Insurance companies, private researchers. Now, the VA cannot guarantee the security or privacy of this information. They can't even guarantee that any laptop computers aren't going to get stolen again from the VA. We've had three situations this year already. Now, let's put this complicated process into perspective now. The VA will ask veterans to donate their DNA. They're doing that right now. The VA will link this genetic information to the veteran's medical records, and this will be used for research. At this point, the question is, who gets the information? Now, the VA cannot guarantee the security of this information. It could get into the hands of researchers, drug companies, insurance companies, and others. If asked, I will not donate my DNA to the VA, and I encourage other veterans to do the same. Now, the VA is launching a large-scale genetic data collection. Now, aiming for breakthroughs in genomic medicine, the Department of Veterans Affairs has begun collecting genetic information from patients and will link the information to each patient's electronic health record. VA officials expect that the large-scale project will reveal links between certain diseases and the genetic makeup of individuals who are prone to them. It could also increase scientists' understanding of the effects of genetics and the environment on people's health. The goal is to find new ways to prevent and treat diseases based on greater knowledge of the underlying influences on human health. Scientists already know that genetic makeup influences how people respond to some medications. Dr. Joel Cuppersmith, Chief Research and Development Officer at the VA, told the American Health Information Community, the AHIC, this fall that the department is a good place for such a project because of its size, integration, and research with medical treatment and well-established EHR system. We feel it is a strongly veteran-centric initiative, Cuppersmith said. The genetic information is collected only from patients who have consented to the test. At the end of October, the department had collected more than 30,000 specimens and had the capacity to bank 100,000, he said. Those specimens were gathered in a pilot project in connection with clinical trials of new drugs, Cuppersmith said. We are now ready to broaden this pilot project, he added. VA spokesman Terry Jameson said the pace of the project's growth has yet to be determined. Significant expansions of sample collection activities will only take place after plans have been thoroughly discussed with the Federal Advisory Committee. Veterans and veteran service organizations will depend upon the budgetary resources available, he said. He declined to say how much the department plans to spend on the project this year. At an earlier meeting, AHIC, a high-level public-private advisory commission chaired by Department of Health and Human Services Secretary Mike Leavitt, was told that it's unclear how best to incorporate genetic information into EHRs. What we consider the gorilla in the room to address the ethical and privacy standards for handling and disclosing genetic information, Cuppersmith told AHIC. Dr. Kathy Hudson, founder of the Genetics and Public Policy Center at Johns Hopkins Hospital University, told the commission that legislation is needed to protect genetic information. And what I'm saying is, do not trust them. Any veteran out here listening, any family of any veteran, do not give them any information. They do not have a right to your to any genetic information from you.
And I would simply point out, when they tell you they're going to protect your privacy, do not believe it. You go to the doctor's office or the dentist's office today, and they ask you to fill out this form to protect your privacy. If you read the form, it doesn't protect your privacy. It gives them the right to turn your private information over to the government agencies, over the insurance companies. And there is a organized, concerted effort across America to collect dossiers on every detail of your life. And they listen to our telephone calls by Project Echelon, Echelon. You can check it out on the Google. They've been doing it for 30 years. They read your faxes. They read your emails. They do it by computers. Now they can certainly listen to your conversations on your cell phone. They built that into every cell phone. You go down to buy a cell phone, you get one for $40. You get three free. Why would they give you three free cellular phones? Why, they just like us. They want us to buy them. They want actually to be able to listen to your conversations. And when you get those cell phones, they have a built-in switch that can be, you don't even have to have it on. They can listen to everything you say. If you
right.
doubt that, we'll be glad to verify it. They want your DNA. They want your fingerprint. They're collecting dossiers on American citizens. And if you doubt that, you need to read General William Odom's book, Fixing Intelligence, 2003, where he says, should the Defense Department be collecting dossiers on American citizens? I say no. Our guest this evening has been Arthur Bernclough. Arthur, one more time, your telephone number?
Telephone number here is 631-474-4261. 631-474-4261. We need your help. It took me 27 years to push through the right for veterans to have lawyers, and we are trying to push through a couple of more real good laws. We are trying to put a limit of 90 to 120 days for a veteran to get an answer. And if the
we'll be right back.
Sure.
Okay, go right ahead, Arthur.
If the veteran does not get an answer from the VA on his claim within 90 to 120 days, we are trying to push through a law that the veteran can take his case into a federal court nearest the veteran's home and change this to a federal court and get himself out of the VA kangaroo court system. That's the next step we have.
Well, I would recommend to our listeners out there that Arthur's work is selfless. He's dedicated to helping veterans, and he's accomplished some amazing things. So our hope is that many of you will want to join with him and help him and support him and get their material and do the writing and contacting your duly elected representatives. Whether you agree with the war in Iraq is not important. What is important is what happens to these men when they come home. And I'm totally against this war. They should never go. But for those who have gone, I want to see that they're taken care of when they get back. And you're not going to be able to do it on your own. But certainly, Walter's going to be out there on the front lines, and his organization for Veterans for Constitutional Law are going to be helping these veterans. So you get behind him. It's well worth your time, your effort. We owe it to those men who've given so much. Go ahead. You got about 2 minutes to wrap up the program, Arthur.
Okay. I've been told by Mal Leary, Capital News Service of the Bangor, Maine Daily News, Maine is a state that a veteran does not get a break at all in. The attitude of the politicians in Maine and this goes for Senator Susan Collins and Olympia Snowe. It goes from the top all the way down to your local representatives, a man who I mentioned, Michael Michaud, one of the two people who voted against lawyers for veterans. He serves on the House Veterans Affairs Committee. And he says, the federal government owes our vets the benefits they've earned in the service of their nation. And Michaud says, I don't want to see lawyers get a cut of these benefits. And this is a state that notoriously, for years and years, has probably been one of the worst states for veterans benefits in the whole country. It's the state of Maine. And this article is available by Mal Leary in the Capital News Service and the Bangor Daily News. That article is available, and anyone who contacts me or writes me, I'll send them a copy of this. And it's something I think they should look at, and I think we should, people of Maine should start deciding to maybe start electing some new representatives, because it seems like when they voted all these people in, they dropped the ball last time. Now, when you drop the ball and you pick it up again and run with it, maybe you can do something. Right now, they've got a bunch of zeros representing the people in Maine.
Well, we're out of time, Arthur. Have a wonderful new year. We'll look forward to talking to you again next year.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Have another program then.
Always a pleasure to work with you.
Good night. God bless you. Well, Arthur Bernclough, Veterans for Constitutional Law. Let me conclude with a poem. I was there when all those boys my age went off to fight a war. And I was there when those same men returned to us no more. I've entertained those heroes on their barren beds of pain, those glory-gutted veterans who to this day remain. Have you ever been in a holding pen where they keep these dregs of war? Behind sad eyes you hear their cries. Was this worth fighting for? I've seen those haunting graveyards causing tears to blur my sight. Those endless rows of crosses making fields of silent white. Their voices plead, "Remember me. I heard my country's call. I, too, was free to hide or flee. Instead, I gave my all." But while we're remembering those who died to make men free, and thinking of those crosses, signs of death for liberty, let us not forget the one who, when he heard his father's call, who, too, was free to hide or flee, but chose to give his all. He faced a world at war with sin. No friends marched by his side. No flags waved in his honor. All alone for us, he died. But that grave could not keep him, nor forever still his breath. He won the war to end all wars, demolish demon death. So remember those white crosses and those sacrifices given. But remember, too, the cross of Christ, their hope because of him. All hail the power of Jesus' name. We still can sing his praise, because his cross cures death's dark loss and brings eternal days. And that was written by one of our listeners, Annette, and we certainly appreciate that, and we carry her book of poems. If you'd like some of the beautiful poems she wrote, why, we do have them. In fact, we should get her on back again here. Poetry has a wonderful way of not only giving ideas, but of touching people's soul. We'll spend a little bit more time, maybe this coming year, reading more in the way of poetry. We do hope many of you will, of course, want to get in the background of what the wars of the last century were all about. If you haven't yet heard my talk on Iraq, The Untold Story, there's a video, and there's a syllabus that goes with that that has the documentation that all of the wars have been contrived. They've been fought in the name of bringing world peace, by those who believe in a new world order and who hate America, who would destroy our sovereignty, but they're using us, our military and financial power, to bring about a new world order and a new world religion. And when you understand that, so much of what's going on makes sense. If you haven't gotten our 4-tape set on globalism, if you haven't got our 4-tape set on the secret government or secret societies, or certainly our secret government special, they are available from Radio Liberty. If you'd like one of our catalogs, we'll be glad to send it to you. We've been at this game for 44 years. We've collected a tremendous amount of information about the political, about the spiritual. And you can't separate the two, because we're fighting a spiritual battle on a political battlefield, but it's really a spiritual battle. It's being fought on a cultural, ideological, and certainly on a financial, educational battlefield, but it's a spiritual battle. And understand, there's been a battle between good and evil since the beginning of time, and it's not imaginary. There really is a God who looks over the affairs of men, and there really is a devil. And our battle is not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. So put ye therefore on the full armor of God, that ye may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. And with that knowledge and that understanding, you understand hopefully what the battle is, and you'll want to join with us and stand with us here at Radio Liberty. We can always use your help. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com, and you can hear us there on the Internet, certainly 5 hours a day at Radio Liberty or the other sites we're on. And then pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until next year, when we'll be back with you again, may the Lord be with you.